I don't like it. There's a submarine about somewhere. I know you can't see it, but it's there, I tell you, waiting, lurking, lying silently on the bottom. We've got to find it, Carruthers. We've got to.
Oh, it's all right, darling. I found it. It was down by... It was down by the plug hole, past the soap.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Kenneth Williams, Hugh Panic, and Joan Sims in...
No, stop messing around.
Hello, and welcome to another half hour of exposure to the incomparable delights of your one and only me, Kenneth P. Williams, your actual star of stage, screen, at
P.
That's right, it's usually silent or frozen. as I was saying...
Wait a minute. I've got something to say. It's about this script. Joan and I got together yesterday and we explicated quite a lot.
Well, if that's what turns you on.
Well, we had to. It's riddled with double entendres and words that mean more than one thing, but that's one of them.
Take the script apart and we'll censor it. Yes. Liberal use of the red pencil is called for.
Surely it's...
Hey?
What? Surely it's blue.
Well, of course it is. That's why we're using the red pencil, you fool. Right, now. Now, this can go. And this.
And that.
Oh, yes. Yes, and you can take that three ways. They're all awful.
And this. And this.
Oh, definitely. This is terrible. Funny, though.
That's out, and so's the whole page. That's that one. Right, what's left now? We've cleaned it up.
That was Stop Messing About with Hugh Panic and Joan Sims. The script was...
Hang on, wait a minute. Oh, Lord, what have we done?
Well, I think we should all go back to the status quo.
Yes, let's do that. It's down the hallway and first on the left. Right. Carry on, Smith. The floor is yours.
And now, a special treat for garden lovers. The Earl of Shottley has very kindly offered to show us around the grounds of his ancestral home.
Welcome to the gardens. Welcome to the gardens of Talpurgisol. As I stand here beneath the dovecot. Oh dear, yes. A little to the left of the dovecot. I'm surveying a charming pastoral scene. Her ladyship is bedding out her sweet Williams and Dibble, the gardener, is watering the delphiniums. Use the hose, Dibble. Take all day with that little watering can. Oh, really? Dibble, don't point it at her ladyship. face the other way, man. No, not this way. Stop touching your forelock and get a towel. Give her ladyship a rub down. Where was I? Oh, yes, yes. Across the lake is a very interesting Palladian edifice known as the Duke of Upcaster's Folly. The Duke was a man of many attributes until the Battle of Blenheim, when he lost a toe and one or two other things. It's rather put paid to his favourite pastime, landscape gardening. However, the other...
Dibble, don't!
Oh, really? Dibble, you idiot! I said a towel, not a trowel! Go and prune the pergola, man, and leave her ladyship alone. She'll soon dry off if she keeps moving. Run round the lawn a few times, dear. Your grace. Show a bit of respect. Now then, on your mark, get set. Serves you right, Dibble. Right in his weed basket. Now you know how the Duke of Upcaster felt.
And now it's Crackerjack and Nori with Mother Time. And peddling across the studio, on her fairy cycle, here comes Maud Nethersole.
Hello, tinies, and biggies too. I've got such a lovely big mail this week. Lots of letters. Lots of letters from tinies asking for more animal stories. Well, once upon a time, there were 486 bears. Their names were George, Alice, Pam, Maximilian, Edith, Sydney, Ramona, and all the others were called Fred. They all lived in a tree in the forest, a big tree with lots of branches, some of which stayed open late on Thursdays. One day, Pam Bear said to Sydney Bear, "Have you noticed that George Bear never eats bacon? I wonder if he's Jewish." And Sydney Bear, who was only three, said, "For the police to do it." "I see," said Pamela Bear. "There's no need to turn grizzly. I was only making conversation." And this led to an argument. Now, sitting under the tree was Mr. Pimble, the friendly postman, who was reading an undelivered picture postcard with a message on the back saying, "Having a wonderful time at Wormwood Scrubs Prison. Wish you were here. All the best, Maureen." At which point, Sydney Bear fell out of the tree and landed on the other end of the bench that Mr. Pimble was sitting on. "Woof!" said Mr. Pimble, or words to that effect. And he shot up into the air and landed in the nest of a large bird whose name escapes me. The bird popped a worm into his mouth and told him not to eat it too quickly. And George Bear, who had heard every word, turned to the other 483 bears and said,
That bird has a cuckoo in its nest. Disguised as a postman, or vice versa."
And he ran off and joined a circus as a performing seal. Which is why you must always make sure you're at the front of an elephant before you try to feed him. Unless I've left something vital out of the story. And now for our song.
Why can't somebody stop her? It's a disgrace.
Here's one specially for the tinies, but I'm sure the biggies will enjoy it too.
No comment.
Oh, have you been to Gooseberry Fair? Parsley, sage, and onion. There's a gentleman there with ginger hair, and if you meet him, better beware. With parsley, sage, and gammon and spinach, hey-ho, says Anthony Rowley. Oh, yes, I've been to Gooseberry Fair, parsley, sage, and onion. And I met a man there, but his hair was fair. He was dancing a jig in his underwear. With parsley, sage, and gammon and spinach, hey-ho, says Anthony Rowley. Are you sure you've been to Gooseberry Fair, parsley, sage, and onion? It wasn't the raspberry fair instead. Well, maybe it was, but it's time for bed. With parsley, sage, and gammon and spinach, let's take the stairs very slowly. Right ho, says Anthony Rowley.
Now we come to Vardaying Back, when people who have made it tell us how they did it. Here are two of London's leading restaurateurs to tell us about their early struggles over a hot stove.
Hello, I'm Gaston. This is mon ami and business confrère Jacques.
Hello! Yes. Very delicioso to Vardy, a dolly old table d'hote.
Now, I understand you have a small chain of restaurants.
Yeah, well, it's not so much a chain, it's more of a charm bracelet, really, isn't it?
Yes, I noticed you jangled a bit.
Oh! Sauce boat.
And how did all this start?
Oh, well, I've always liked pretty things. Providing their tasteful, of course.
He means the restaurant, you great lummox.
Oh, dear. Lummox, indeed. Well, we began with a snack bar down the Elephant and Castle, the Bijou Bite, it was called. Nothing fancy, of course, just toad in the hole, Welsh and chips. But it seemed to catch on, didn't it?
It was your speciality de la maison, what did it?
Oh, yes.
Elephant and Castle pudding. Yes. Oh. It took two of us to get it out of the oven. But it was fade. Oh, he got the touch, you see.
Yeah,
touch.
Well, I do have this certain facility.
Oh, we can knock up a souffle with one hand behind his back.
Yes.
Now, he's often had to, haven't you?
Oh, I know. Well, trouble is, you see, the kitchen is so small, that's why we had to extend our premises.
Needed to enlarge ourselves, yes, we did. So we took over Sid's transport cafe on the M1 motorway, done it all up Spanish.
Yeah, stuck a rose behind the waiter's ear hole and called the place El Cid, didn't
El Cid,
it?
Yes. And the me and you, Ducky, all Spanish, like eating your way through the Iberian Peninsula, it was, wasn't it?
Yes, there was. We had the toad in the ole. Your Spanish Welsh rarebit flamenco star.
And steak and El Sydney pudding.
Yes.
A dish fit for a king, Ducky, or any other royal personage.
Oh, and them lorry drivers, remember? Wanted a second helping of everything, didn't they?
Most of them got it too. We had to open another branch in Crouch End.
But I think it was the El Cid that first brought us to notice of the public.
Yes, and the police.
Yes.
Yes. Tell him for why.
Oh, no, I shouldn't.
Go on.
No, I can't.
Go on.
No.
Get it out.
Get it out. Well, see, I had taken on this Spanish head waiter, see? And
yes, tell him his name. Well, tell him his name. No. It was L. Clint, wasn't it?
Well, L. Clint, as you so rightly have it. I met him when I was at Torreolimus.
Torreolimus.
That's next door to Malaga, you know.
That's
you
right.
Know. Strictly a business trip, of course.
Yes, hoping to pick up some local dishes, wasn't you?
Yes, I was. Yes, just to enlarge my gastronomic repertoire. Mm. But anyhow, this L. Clint said he wanted to work in England, and he was open to offers.
He'd come over if you pay his fare. And
yes,
you did, didn't you? First class.
First class.
And yes, bought him a new pair of castanets.
Oh, yes. The dance was very shabby. But I thought he might knock off a number or two while serving the hors d'oeuvres, you know.
He'd have knocked off anything, that one.
Yes.
Picture the scene, Ducky. The gala opening of the El Cid, the place packed with celebrities. Hanging from the chandelier, leery they were. All with their yes, they were hanging. All with their tongues hanging out, waiting for the first course. And where was El Clint?
He hadn't arrived.
No, he hadn't. He'd arrived all right, along with his wife, 16 children, and his gypsy grandmother. They'd all been arrested. And tell him for why.
I can't. I keep trying to put it behind me.
Oh, you can tell. You can tell Uncle Douglas, can't you?
Tell him what L. Clint and his family was doing all up and down the M1 motorway.
They was camping.
And now it's my pleasure, for want of a better word, and I can think of several, to introduce that trendy trio with a difference, Peter, Paul and Mrs. Nosepoltice.
Nice to have a pleasure.
Sock it to me and all that stuff.
Yes, well, what song are you going to sing for us this week?
Well, it's a traditional bit of folk that went over very big during our successful season at the Copacabana.
Yeah, in Tulse Hill.
I'm all anticipation.
When I was a bachelor, I got fed up being lonesome as can be.
So he bought a little dog, an Alsatian pup, to keep him company.
The landlord said, no dogs allowed, and that applies to you.
So I slipped him half a quid, and I became a member of the doggy-doggy few.
When I was a spinster, I lived all alone in a flat on the second floor.
She didn't have a friend to call her own, so she bought a Labrador.
I started to chat of this and that, the way dog owners do.
And I felt very chuffed when he took me to Crufts with members of the Doggy Doggy Feud.
Now I'm not a bachelor living alone.
And I'm no longer a spinster.
They're running a beauty shop for dogs in the borough of Westminster.
It all began when two dogs met
for a moonlight rendezvous.
And the mongrel living here is a souvenir. And a very odd dog it is too.
Time now for our film adaptation, A Tale to Wring Your Withers, if you've brought them along. Yes, it's the story of the orphan boy who asked for more. Oliver Stick.
Shouldn't that be Twist?
Oh, very well, Twist. Oh, damn it, bust. I'm over 21.
Don't worry, we all are, Jack.
The scene of Foundling's workhouse in the 19th century.
And Mr. Fumble the Beadle, I stand at the head of the table with me hand upon me stuff.
Oh, you are awful.
Yes. But I must get out on with dishing out the gruel. Who's next?
Please, sir, it's me, sir. Oliver Stick, sir. Can I have some more gruel, sir?
More gruel? More? Ungrateful whelp. Have you ever heard me asking for more?
Well, the other night when you were with Matron...
I'm talking about food.
Oh, sir, do not be too hard on the lad. He was orphaned 2 years before he was born. Then left in a wickerwork container a shabby little basket.
Whose side are you on?
Plead not for him, Matron. I have decided... I shall fling the snivelling wretch out into the snow.
But it's mid-July.
I can wait, boy. I can wait.
Oranges! Buy my ripe oranges!
Quite a short-sighted match seller. It was some time later. Young Oliver Stick was now bound apprentice to an elderly undertaker.
Yes, very good, boy. You've made your first coffin. Now, screw on the lid. Yes, yes. Very good. You've only made one little mistake, boy.
What, sir? Why is that, sir?
You're supposed to be out here.
Oliver was not a success as an undertaker. Once he varnished a corpse instead of the coffin.
Still he had a lovely finish. I decided to run away.
After that joke, I don't blame you.
That's your row.
Yes, to run away to old London town.
At this point, I, Douglas Smith, take on the role of old London town. Already I'm beginning to spread in all directions. I have a Moorgate in front of me and a Wapping behind.
I'm saying nothing, mate.
My East End is rather scruffy, but my West End lights up at night. From time to time, worthy citizens are given the freedom of me.
Nice. You alone, alone, in this strange, smelly old Douglas Smith.
Hello, I'm the Artful Nadger. My master Fagin is always on the lookout for likely young lads.
Well, actually, I'm waiting for a friend.
No, but listen, listen. Fagin can teach you to put your hand in a pocket so that no one will notice.
Ooh, what are we waiting for then?
So you're young Oliver, eh, my dear? I'm Fagin. Now, you've met the Artful Nadger, and this is Nancy.
Who's going to play the Nancy part?
Well, I was thinking...
Yes. Well, it's obviously got to be Miss Sims, who will now sing us a song about her osteopath.
Now then, Oliver. Come here, my dear. I shall teach you the art of pinching wallets. First, I want you to do it with two fingers.
Well, like this, sir.
Show a little respect, my boy. Look, I'll tell you what to do. Why not try it with Nancy?
What here?
Oh, good idea. I'll try and pinch your valuables without you noticing them.
Good. Now, let's see what you've learned, son. Gently now. Gently. Yes, very nearly right. I did spot a couple of boobs. Dear, now I'm going to teach you how to distinguish fake jewellery from the real thing, my dear, just by tasting it. You got to lick a locket or two, boy. You got to lick a locket or two.
Some days later, Oliver was ready to begin his life of crime. He and Nancy set out to scour my backwaters, looking for a likely place to dip somebody.
Look, Oliver, see that rich gent with the gold watch standing over there by the horse trough? See if he can lift it.
Right. Here I go.
No, love, not the horse trough, the gold watch.
Oh, sorry, I'll try again.
Gently now. Yes, now slip your hand in the pocket. Easy. His pocket, love, not yours. That's it, that's it, gently.
You turned my trousers off, boy, why?
I thought your legs might be hot.
How thoughtful. Here's a sovereign.
My husband and I.
Said the man's wife.
My husband and I once had a little son who looked like you. Tell me, boy, have you got a strawberry birthmark on your left deltoid?
No, I haven't.
Then you must be he. He didn't have one either.
So they took the scruffy, ragged little lad back to their mansion, and there, waiting to greet him, were none other than the Stop Messing Aboutettes with full orchestra.
Hello, Ollie.
This is our finale.
And there's over 20 verses to this song.
Oh, no.
We'll just sing one. Ollie.
Only one. Golly.
Then we'll stop it and we'll hop it.
Or the sketch will be too long.
We know you've been a slumming by the faint humming.
One of those old familiar pongs from way back when.
Oh, golly gosh, Ollie.
You need a darn good wash, Ollie.
Ollie, never go away.
Move upwind a bit but stay.
Ollie, never go away.
There ends this week's film adaptation. We now have a final word from Dr. Schnitzelboom.
Parenthood is definitely hereditary. If if your parents didn't have any children, the chances are you won't have any either.
That was Stop Messing About with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, Joan Sims, and the Max Harris Group. The script was by Johnny Mortimer and Brian Cook and Miles Rudge. The producer was John Simmons.